It's time for some Monday morning quarterbacking here on News Talk 1400 DWS. You can reach us at 356-9397. You can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line at 351-5357. Or you can email us at talk@wdws.com. Now, here are the Monday morning quarterbacks, Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our Monday morning quarterback session. Well, we've got a lot of things to talk about today. We've got volleyball and basketball and football, the football playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. We're pleased to start off the program this morning with Chris Thomas, the Illinois volleyball coach, has been kind enough to come down here in his busy schedule and be with us for guided his team, of course, to the Sweet 16. Chris, thanks for coming in this morning. Congratulations. And can you just win one of these in four or three or something like that? These fivers are killers.
Yeah, when you go on the road, you want to give the fans their money's worth. So, no, it's, you know, I mentioned before the tournament had started that, you know, every team you're going to play from here on out is good. And Hawaii was a tough first round matchup. And, you know, some were calling it the marquee matchup of the first round. And, excuse me, we were able to control that match early. They made some adjustments, and then we were able to come out on top at the end, and then got a reversal against Washington. We came out, you know, again well, and then Washington made served us really tough, and then we had to readjust to that and made a few other defensive changes and able to take it to five, and it seems like we're thriving off the fifth set. So I'll take the win however we can get it, and really happy for the girls.
Was there a time in this fourth set, was there a timeout or something where people just kind of decided we're going to go win this thing?
There was. You know, it was 13-10 in the fourth, and we had just made four errors in a row, and I took a timeout, and I said, hey, I like everything we are doing right now. I like all the swings you're taking. I like everything. I like we're being aggressive. We're just missing everything by an inch. So keep taking swings, and it'll happen. And sure enough, it did, and challenging them to serve a little bit tougher, and we did, and put them back on their heels, and then we just rolled that momentum on into the fifth, and able to come out early, and you know, get a substantial lead in the fifth. That's pretty hard to come back if you're the opposing team when it's that way. So again, really nice win by the team, and a great way to respond to the pressure on the road.
You know, Chris, as I think back to last year when Kevin Hamley was here, they lost some really tough five setters, and it seemed like there's a feeling if you lose one and then you play tight, maybe, I don't know. But once you start winning these five-setters, is there something that takes place on the team? It reminds me of the Northwestern overtime games. Once they get into overtime, Northwestern knows they're going to win because sure. They have won.
Sure. Yeah, and I think that's a good observation. I think a lot of times, and we face this too at the beginning of the season. You know, we had the close one here
right.
at Stanford at home, Colorado shortly thereafter. You know, I told the team you have to be in these positions to learn how to win them. And, again, that's where being in the Big Ten helps. You know, we were talking before we came on air, you got six teams left in the Big Ten in the tournament out of the 16. That's phenomenal for the conference. But to be in those battles day in and day out and knowing that you can come out on top in those battles, I think once we got to the fifth, everyone was looking at each other and said, we are winning this thing and this is our game.
How does your strategy change, if at all, in the fifth set?
You know, the fifth set, a lot of times I tell the staff, hey, drop your clipboard. It's time to start cheerleading and, you know, make sure that they're feeling okay and still being aggressive and making sure we're just taking smart swings. And you know, our passing and defense were phenomenal in the last two and a half sets, so or last set and a half, I should say. So really happy to see that. And, again, it's a great way to respond to the pressure on the road. And, you know, for a young team, they're developing a real sense of team and you know, just able to come out on top in the tough moments. So,
Dave Lone, great calls. You keep me up too late.
Keep me up too late.
Yeah.
Give me more gray hairs, Coach.
But I know you didn't have a chance after the matches because of NCAA rules to talk to Chris. So what's been something that you've been wanting to ask him all weekend?
Well, I just, before we started the tournament, our pre-match interview before the Hawaii match, my comment to Coach was that I think we're playing our best volleyball at exactly the right time. Do you agree? I would pose that question again to you. I think we're even better than we were before we got on the plane to Seattle.
Absolutely. I think these moments, again, you know, you're in these situations, you come out on top, that gives you the confidence to keep on rolling. This time of year, you're not reinventing the wheel, you're not doing anything new, you're just doing it better, and you're doing it more consistently. And, from day one, that's always the goal. And, we'll add in a few things. We did change up on the fly against Washington. We changed our game plan. And, again, we've done that, though, in the Big Ten. And it wasn't a surprise to the girls. It wasn't like, oh, my gosh, this is why we're doing, you know, X, Y, Z. No, it's they say, okay, yeah, this is what we're doing. And certain times in set two, it didn't look very good. But, hey, stick with it. I know you guys are good, and just kind of keep giving them the confidence to execute.
And it seems like there's a different hero every night. Well, Jordan Poulter could be the hero, is the hero every night, but the supporting cast, we talked about how our youth has developed. Megan Cooney has the match-winning kill, and she just had a huge weekend at the Alaska Airlines Arena.
Yeah, absolutely. Freshman rise to the occasion. I've seen it before, and Megan didn't surprise me. I mean, she's been steady for us all year, and to have a weekend like that against really top quality opponents, I think she hit over 400 for the weekend, had double-digit kills both nights, great on the block, it is truly a team effort. We can't get those if Jordan can't put up a set, if our passers can't give us something to set. Go down a list of everything that happens in a game, but really proud of the team for embracing the culture and being able to, come out in these tough battles.
I'd like to talk just a little more, or have you talk, as a matter of fact, about Poulter. Dave mentioned her, but I don't think she gets enough credit, I don't know, nationally or what. I keep wanting people to say, wow, she does everything a person can possibly do as a setter. I mean, she digs, she kills, she serves, she blocks, she runs a team. I mean, is she just, you've seen so many, maybe I'm going overboard here, but I think she's
remember,
one of the better setters.
He was a setter. He was a setter, Jim. He knows the position.
Yeah, I understand.
One thing, I'll let you finish your question. One match, when we win, I have a player on as our player of the match, and I think I just had Jordan on. And we won another tough match, and I picked another kid because I like to, share the love a little bit. And I told Coach before the interview, our post-game interview, I should have picked Jordan, but he goes, she knows she's good.
Yeah, she puts the work in, that's for sure, and I agree with you guys. She's one of the top in the country, if not the best, and she's able to take a lot of average passes and turn them into great ones and distribute the ball. She does it all. She's had to, when I first got here, her location was a little bit off and her defense wasn't quite where I wanted it to be. And you tell a player to do something and she, a lot of players sometimes, okay, well, it's uncomfortable, I don't want to make change. She'll make the change right then and there because she wants to win that bad. And she's been a great leader for us and has really worked on that part of her game as well. And I think her future career will tell how great of a setter she is. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily any accolades they get here. I tell them all the time, individual award is a team award. And with the Big Ten stuff rolled out, Brandy wasn't eligible because she missed those matches in midway through the season. And I said, Brandy, you get the snub, but, you get the wins. It doesn't really matter, in my opinion, because everything we do is a team effort, and always want to make sure we look at that. But Jordan is a great setter, and really happy to have her.
She's not going to leave early for the draft.
No, okay. No. But I think she should get a shot on the national team, we're talking. I'm talking with the national team coach to to try to see what if they have any space for her.
For this summer.
If possible, but that's up to him and Karch, and we'll see what happens from there. But I think she is that good, and she has that kind of drive and motivation. So
how about Michigan State now? This is a team that shut you out up in East Lansing, but here we are later in the season. You're better, and this is a neutral court. Optimistic, I am anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, us too. They're very good on their home court, as most teams are, and they serve as tough as anyone. They've got they're a lot like Washington. They've got seven or eight seniors that have played a long time, that experience usually goes a long way. You know, they've fallen short a few years. So I think for us, you know, I'm not sure how many people expect us to be here other than us. So I think the pressure is on their end and, you know, try to advance. And for us, we're playing good volleyball, and I think we just keep the pressure on with our serve and our defense. And but they're playing very well. I watched them on tape last night, and they're running fast, and they've got good hitters. And, you know, it's, again, sometimes it just comes down to the moment and the matchup and location and kind of go from there. And it's hard to predict some things sometimes, but I feel very good about how we're playing. Like Dave said, you know, probably our best volleyball of the year, and that's usually the goal.
You talk about serve a lot, and I wonder what you mean by that, because as a fan, as I watch, it looks like the service is usually returned. And what is it about the service that you're expecting, both defensively and offensively?
Yeah, well, the serve is your initial contact, and so it's the most important thing to set up your defense, really. So if you're a good serving team, you can put a team back on their heels. If you only give them two options to set, it makes it that much easier to block. You know, if you're just serving on lollipops, and we call them lollipops, which
yeah.
is easy,
yeah.
free balls, whatever you want to call them.
Sure.
Every team, if every team has every weapon at their disposal, then it's really difficult to stop. And so you really want to try to be aggressive from the service line without being overly aggressive and missing too many. But
How many is too many?
Really depends on the match. You're looking right moment, right locate, you know, right location. If your ace-to-air ratio is like 1-2, that's usually good. So if you had 5 aces, 10 airs is acceptable. Or, you know, if you're – I've seen matches, though, more in the men's game than the women's game, where you've seen 25, 30 airs, and the team comes out on top because they're putting that much pressure on from the service line. They're scoring more points, you know, in that direction. I'm not sure we'll ever get to that amount of airs, but, you know, there are some airs that are acceptable. And, you know, how are you missing those airs? I'll give you an example. We played Hawaii, and they missed, I don't know, about 10 serves in the net. And 10 serves in the net, that you don't have to worry about returning them or judging whether they're in and out. And so we just want to make sure we're staying as aggressive as possible and giving a best chance to our defense. And, yeah, we work on it a lot every day. So,
well, Dave Lone, this is 3 o'clock on Friday afternoon. You mm-hmm. have that other shirt ready. You had that been laundered yet?
Or yeah, it's going to be a quick turnaround, that's yeah. for sure. yeah. But, you know, it's a campus we've been on before, so it won't be quite like a trip to Seattle. It's still, you know, State College, you can't get there from here sometimes. you guys know that from traveling with basketball and football as well. But, no, it's a gym we're familiar with, probably a couple opponents we're familiar with, and I'm ready to go. I got to do laundry today. But
I did mine last night, okay. But it's tournament time. Anything can happen, yeah. And like you said, you hope you're playing your best volleyball at this time, and I believe we are, and I know we are, and I know how far we've come from the beginning of the season, so I'm happy for the team and, you know, their experience, too. It's as a former player, you know, to beat teams on their home court and this time of year, mm-hmm. It's a really cool feeling, and happy to be able to do it and to be able to move on into this weekend against Michigan State.
One final question here. I saw all the home matches, and sometimes I came away feeling, boy, this team is really good, and sometimes I think, I don't know if they're going to make it or not. Was there a time during the season where you said this is the turnaround, or has it been more gradual than that?
I think it's been pretty gradual over the year. You know, we're a young team. We are really young. We were talking about the basketball game last night. They're a young team, too. You're going to see some errors and mistakes that, you know, not typical, but that's a part of the learning process. You know, sometimes it's tough to see that, some of those nuances, if you aren't in it every day. But, you know, we've been working hard to figure it out, and to play consistently is usually the biggest factor in volleyball. If you can always take good swings and always put a team back on their heels and, you know, always respond with some way, shape, or form, you know, that's the way to do it. I think, you know, a lot of moments I can look back on the season and say, yeah, you know, we're right there. We're competitive. You know, you start in the first weekend, we played against second weekend, excuse me. We went to Louisville and played Louisville, who was tied for first in the ACC, beat them in three. We play Western Kentucky, who had not lost a match after we beat them. We set our offensive record hitting 650. Following weekend, we play Stanford here at home and go toe-to-toe with them against the returning national champs. And then, you know, we get in the Big Ten season, and to get 12 wins in the Big Ten season is a huge deal. And I told the team that. You know, and Ohio State, I think, was a good win. You know, their backs were against the wall. And, you know, they had everything. You know, they were fighting, and it'd be easy for us to kind of just lay over you know, we had the tournament bid, but we really
I still
fought.
Think the win over Minnesota stands out.
Exactly.
Me.
I mean, I think everything, though, we had, even the loss at Minnesota was, I think, was good for a lot of reasons, because we just don't go away. And that's what I want to instill in them. And you always have a chance. You know, if the ball is in play, you always have a chance. And I think they've come to realize that, and they've come up with some really phenomenal play. Now you get me thinking about the season. I go back to even when Brandy got injured, and you know, we had Morgan step in, and we got three quality wins with Brandy out. So a lot of moments in this season that I can think of now that I'm reflecting on it. Usually do that after we're done, but now that you got me thinking about it, there it is. But really happy for the team. You know, even for, and I mentioned to the group before the match, even the ones that don't play that you guys never see are working their tails off right now, and it's been just a great team environment, team experience, and again, I think that's a reflection of where we're at now, you know, in the Sweet 16.
Thanks for your time this morning, and the best of luck this week.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris.
Uh-huh.
Hey, we'll take a break here, come back, and talk some more as we do our Monday morning quarterbacking right after this. Well, our thanks to Chris Thomas for coming by. And the best of luck to them. Again, it's first serve coming up 3 o'clock Friday afternoon against Michigan State at Penn State. So there are 6 Big Ten teams left in the volleyball, and 3 of them are in this one foursome. There's Missouri in there with the 3 Big Ten teams. So we go to last night. I haven't quite got over that yet. I don't know about you, but that had we won would have been one of the more remarkable victories that I can remember in a real long time. I mean,
but Jim, isn't the record 23 points when you're coming from behind? Didn't we have a game against a team out of which not Seton Hall? What was the team that came in here and we came back from a 23 point?
I believe Seton Hall was it wasn't Seton Hall.
I think it was Seton Hall, but in any case, it was a number of years ago, and I think that was the record. 23 was the record. We came back 22 and we're leading by 2, so it was almost. But that's what we keep saying. 2 overtime losses is tough to start the Big Ten, but Illinois played pretty hard in those games, without necessarily having the best talent on the floor. I've said this, and I'll repeat, if you were going to take the Maryland team and the Illinois team and put them together and pick out the top players, you'd start with Cohen at point. Mm-hmm. Then you'd probably have Fernando.
You got to take a big guy, don't you?
Fernando at center. I mean, he's clearly better than anybody Illinois's got. They got Jackson, who's a NBA prospect at one forward. He's terrific. And then they got Herter, who's a really good player. So, I mean, they got the 4 best players on the court, really. I mean, if somebody wanted to debate that with me, I don't know. I don't think there's any doubt about it. And yet, as a team, Illinois fought back and nearly won the game, lost in overtime by 1.
We're at 356-9397. And the Castle Heating and the Cooling text line is 351-5357. So those of you that want to talk a little basketball or football or volleyball, join us. Jump right in. We do this on Monday morning, and we like to find out what you think as well. So what do you think toward the end of that game? What were the, I guess people will talk about not getting the ball in bounds with 4 seconds to go. But the coach said after the game, he said, we didn't lose the game then. We lost the game in the first 3 minutes of the game.
Well, yeah, you hate to be – you look up and you're down 10 to nothing. He took out the whole first team after 4 minutes. he put 5 players in, not 4. He was really upset. He was so upset at halftime that he cut his finger on a garbage can. He threw a garbage can and had to have his fingers wrapped. The team came out right in the middle of the music, in the middle of halftime. So I knew something went on in that locker room.
Yeah, he broke a clipboard, too. I was sitting close enough to see him do that during a timeout.
Yeah.
And they didn't have the when this game started, they didn't have the fight or the same intensity that he expects every time you go out there, and he expects it from the opening gun.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's 40-minute game, and you got to play every minute. Of course, the last two games have been 45 minutes, but I just thought that that this team is starting to reflect the coach. Mm-hmm. And the coach demands certain things, and I think that the team is reacting positively. I don't think that there's anything to be ashamed of in losing these two games in overtime. I mean, they fought hard and lost. I mean, you go into overtime, and the two teams, you'd think the defense would be pretty strong at that point, and the two teams took 11 shots and made 10 baskets. And Illinois made five, and Maryland made five. And the last play, they lost on the last second of regulation. They lost a sure win. And then in overtime, on the last second, there was a foul called on a play in which it looked to me like the block was pretty solid. I mean, right over the top.
Well, I've seen that lots of times. It was all ball there. The only thing he could have called is the body, and I don't even think the body was involved.
Uh-uh. I don't either. Brian, what'd you think?
I agree with you. Yeah. Deion thought that they probably called it technically because he probably after the – you know, in the course of blocking it, the bodies.
Well, he fell down.
You know,
like he was knocked over. And
yeah,
but he fell down because he was pushed down from the ball.
I understand that, but I'm saying that probably entered into it. But if I'm an official and there's been a game going on like that all the time, and there's anything that's in the least bit questionable in the last few seconds of the game, mm-hmm. you don't want the game to end that way.
Right. Yeah, and that's what Deion said. 9 times out of 10, they're not going to call a foul. They just let that go and go to, you know, let the kids play it out in the second overtime. So, and I agree with him on that.
It is 9:30. We have several callers waiting, and we'll let Brian go ahead and give us the news headlines, and after that we'll come right back and get to the phone. Back on our Monday morning quarterback show, Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here. Thanks, callers, for holding on. We go first to Jeff. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning, gentlemen. Nice to hear you guys this morning. And unfortunately, I understand the clock's winding down on that a little bit, but we'll enjoy it while we can. I wanted to talk a little bit about the officiating in a broader sense. And I speak a little bit from experience because many years ago I officiated in California at the high school varsity level and a little bit at the junior college level as well. And what we were taught at the time was that if you aspire in any way to work at the college level, you have to demonstrate what was called a feel for the game, to the effect that you didn't necessarily call every piece of contact that happened, but you had to have a sense for when such contact was placing one of the players involved at a disadvantage. That was the key to it, advantage, disadvantage. I heard Ed Hightower reiterate that. I don't know if it was on your show or Sports Talk or somewhere, but it was on WDWS within the last couple of years. But that's not what's happening now, especially this season. It seems like every little incident of contact is being called. And in particular, I was holding for you when I think you were talking with Brian about the last second call. And again, what I was taught by people who worked at the Pac-10 level back in those days was that if you're going to call a foul in that situation, you better make sure that there's absolutely no doubt about it. If there's a borderline situation there, you don't call it. So I can't understand how somebody who's working at the Big Ten level would make a call like that and end the game like that. I don't know who that person was, but I really don't understand how he's at the Big Ten level. Lauren knows better than anybody the historical context of problems that we've had with officiating. You know, Lute Olson, the national championship game, and to me, this kind of almost ranks right up there. I'd love to know what you guys think.
Well, first of all, back when you were officiating, they didn't have that illegal screen business going on. That's about half the fouls in the game.
It's a lot of them. You know, I think probably one of the officials under the basket must have seen body contact of some kind. I mean, I thought it was incidental, but the block was really good on that last play. But I fall back on, you know, the same answer I've been given for 50 years, and that's you can't officiate the game. A human being can't officiate basketball. It's impossible. You just have to accept that they're going to do the best they can. I mean, there's just too. I mean, when the ball goes up on the rim, how many bodies are colliding on there? How do you decide which is a foul and what isn't?
Let's go on and see what Lawrence has to say. Hello, Lawrence.
How you doing, guys?
Morning.
Just one observation about the game last night. I want to just kind of comment somewhat on Mark Smith. Here's a very gifted ball player who, in the past couple of games, really haven't played up to his ability. I think if Mark Smith would have bought his A game like he can, we would have won the game in Wake Forest. I think we would have won the game in Northwestern. I think we would have won the game last night because he is such a problem matchup for the opposing teams. I think a lot of his problem is he's still adjusting to college play. Coming out of high school, it's kind of a wake-up call for him. But he kind of reminds me of Sergio McClain when Sergio McClain came out of high school, out of Manu, and, you know, he's still trying to bring some of that high school experience with him. And apparently he found out real quickly that, you know, that wasn't going to cut it. I think that everybody needs to pick up their game, but especially Mark Smith. And the reason I single him out, because out of all the players on that team, he is such a problem matchup for any opposing team that we are going to play. So I'm hoping that under the coaching staff of Underwood, that he, and I know he will be developed into the type of ball player that he is capable of being.
Wait a second. Why do you consider him a problem matchup for the other team? What problem does he create?
Strength, his ability to be able to drive to the basket. He can do that, draw fouls. That little guard from Maryland last night, he literally took that game over in the last few minutes of that game. He drove to the basket.
Yep.
And he's a lot smaller than Mark Smith. And I haven't seen that in Mark Smith. I saw it in the beginning of the season when they were playing, but for some reason, we haven't seen that. We don't have a person that is capable, just like in the John Gross era, we don't have yet a person that is capable of putting that ball on the floor, getting to the basket, and drawing those fouls. And I'm just saying, by him being able to play that guard position or that wing position, he has the ability, the size, and the strength to get in there and to do that. And I think if that's the missing link to this offense right there, his production. And if he were to do that, again, those games that we've lost here lately, I think it would have made a big difference. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Lawrence. Let's go to Alan. Hello, Alan.
All right, guys. I somewhat agree with the last caller on that. As far as officiating goes, I'm an official, too. In the last play, there was a lot of body contact. I would have made that call. I mean, I know people are going to disagree with that. I would have made that call because there's just too much body contact. Yeah, he had his hand on top of the ball, but the body was going through him. And everybody that I was with said the same thing. There was a foul there. I just wish there wasn't. You guys were talking about the point spread. You talk about State Farm Center, or I remember we came back from 30 points against Clemson several years ago, but that was at Clemson.
30 points?
Against Clemson. Check it out for a minute. You don't remember that?
No, I don't remember.
We were down 30. We were down 30, and I can't remember.
And we won?
And we won. Booker for Clemson was our best player. I can't remember who was on our team. was about 5, 6, 7 years ago. I think Weber might have been still the coach.
Okay.
Maybe.
I don't remember that.
So we
I
did
don't
come
either.
Back from 30. But anyway, I just wish we had a different play there with 4 seconds to go. It's easy to say that now. But you got to tell your guy, you got to make sure you touch the ball. You just got to somehow touch the ball. You don't have to catch it, do anything with it, but you got to touch it. And
well, were they not, what was the problem there then? Don't you think the four guys were trying to get open?
I think they're trying to get open, but if you give it to the ball in the front court there, they're going to get trapped in the corner. But what you can do is...
You don't care if you get trapped in the corner with 4 seconds to go. They're going to foul you anyway. Catch the ball anywhere.
Okay, then get the ball in and let's get fouled because we're a real good free throw shooting team.
Well, that's what they were trying to do.
That's what we're trying to do.
Well, we sure didn't do it very good.
We didn't do it good, but that's what they were trying to do. The coach didn't call for the long pass to Kipper Nichols way down the court. He didn't want to do that.
All right. I understand that. But you still got to be able to figure out a way to have somebody touch the ball.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you get the ball in the front court, you grab it and throw it. I mean, you don't even wait for him. I mean, if you throw it in the air, it takes 3 or 4 seconds for the ball to come back down anyway. But we just botched it. That's all it is to it.
Well, that's right. It didn't turn out right. But, I mean, somebody has got to fight his way and get open. That's all there is to that, and catch the ball, and then he'd be fouled. You'd be shooting free throws with 3 seconds to go.
We had a block out on that last shot, then we'd been on it. Nobody would be talking about this today. But, well, that didn't happen either.
Well, he was trying to block out. If you watch the play over again, it's just the guy went way up over him, and Kipper didn't jump. I mean, Kipper had his body on the guy, but the way the ball came off, it came off perfectly to Fernando, and he put it back in.
It was a tough one.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Alan. And he just tipped it. You know, those kind of things. What do you make of those? 5 out of 10, maybe?
Well, you don't make all your tips, but he kind of had it was a tip with a little control to it. I mean, he seemed to be in the air and you know, so high up there. It was a very, very short shot. But the 3-point shot was way off. It just happened to come off the side. It's like, remind me of the play against Michigan where, you know, the air ball where Nick Anderson was pushed aside by Higgins. That's going back to 89. How's that for a comparison? But I don't remember the Clemson game. We came back.
I don't either. We'll have to, I guess we can check the record books. Let's see what Scott has to say. Hello, Scott.
Hi, gentlemen. I watched the game last night and was cringing and hollering and everything else, too. The one thing that I've noticed in the past, and I haven't ever heard anybody comment on this, but referees being human, I think they fall into habits and patterns, too. The last, I don't know how many trips down the floor that they had, they called a foul every time, including a couple of phantom fouls on drives to the lane I'm drawing a blank on their point guard.
But Cowan.
When they showed the replay, nobody was within a foot of him. I mean, it was very clear. Now, there were people waving around and all kinds of things, but nobody touched him. He made the little shot because he wasn't impeded, and then he made the follow-up. But if you watch that, and this is purely from memory because I didn't watch it again, I really think their last 5 trips down, there was a foul called every single time, and I think refs fall into that pattern too.
Well, you know what the problem with the referees are? Those games are all filmed, and they have to sit and watch the film of it. And the rules are: you call fouls when there are fouls. They all realize that they're going to be judged and evaluated after the game is over, and so they're calling every single thing. You know, if you get anything under 50 fouls in a game, that's good.
I mean, but they weren't calling him on the other side of the floor. That was what was so very, very frustrating. And I'm biased. I will freely admit it, and I yell at the referees more than I should. But
you aren't the only one, Scott.
I'm not the Lone Ranger. Don't tell Santa Claus. But I mean, that was the one thing I noticed in the overtime. Every trip down, they were fouled. Every trip down, we got a contested shot, and there were no fouls called, it seemingly.
It could be my imagination, but it seems to me there is more people, either on the television or in person, watching games this year that have complaints about the officiating.
The last couple games have seemed to be bad.
I don't know. You go to Billis and go to some of those guys that's supposed to know what's going on, and they, you know, that's really a bad call. And there's more than one of those. And Lauren is quite right. Try to officiate a game sometime and see how difficult it is.
No, thank you. Don't want to do that.
Hey, thanks, Scott. Appreciate your call. And Alan is next. Hello, Alan.
Hi. Two quick questions. First, I've always wondered, when a player does a tip, do they get credit for a rebound?
Yes. Well, if it's a controlled tip.
Okay.
And you that's a judgment. If it's controlled, it has to be controlled. You just can't be batting the ball, but if it's controlled, it's a shot, yes.
Okay. So the play at the very end of the game there, he would have gotten credit for a rebound.
Yeah. Yes. He got a rebound and a basket, yes.
Okay. And the second question was, who is the coach that came out at halftime?
Who is the coach who came out?
Came out with the players at halftime.
I don't remember. I mean, I don't.
Yeah, bald headed and a beard, tall guy. I don't know the coach.
Antigua, I suppose. I mean, I don't know.
I don't think it was him.
Oh, okay. He's not bald. I don't know.
Okay.
More likely the strength and.
Could have been.
Strength coach.
Okay.
Wasn't Jen Coleman?
I don't know. I didn't see it.
I don't know.
People
who
were telling me about that they were out there like it was the beginning of the game. They were running and doing loosening up and all that.
Yep. He was cracking the whip.
Yeah.
Oh, no. You're right. That was a strength coach. Yes. That's correct.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Quick break here. We're coming right back. Phone lines open at 356-9397. Text us at 351-5357. Back after this. This is our Monday morning quarterback show. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here. We're at 356-9397. The text line is 351-5357. Brian is next. Hi, Brian.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We're fine. How are you doing?
Well, a loss is a loss, regardless of the officiating. But I would first say congratulations to Coach Thomas and the girls on reaching the Sweet 16. I think that's fantastic for a first-year coach. I think there's some good and bad to basketball. The good news is I saw a team that I have not seen on the court in a long time fight. And being down by 20 points to come back, the crowd got into it. I think that's a big positive for Coach Underwood. Of course, the con side of that, we have a young team, a lot of simple mistakes that were made. T-John trying to alley-oop the ball down towards the end of the game, the inbound pass. Young kids make young mistakes. I officiated for many, many years, saw it all the time. I guess my question going off subject, we haven't talked about football. All of these transfers leaving Lovey's program, what kind of position does that put Lovey in? Does he get these scholarships back, and does he get to go out and start recruiting to fill those in to try and rebuild that? I mean, you've lost some starters that played some significant minutes, and I'm really curious to hear your take on that.
Well, of course they get the scholarships back, and that's why he's doing it. And now he's up to 23 scholarships, where at one point he only had 15. Now he can fill they'll probably be up to 25 before he's done. But the thing to remember about the people who started, there was different reasons for every person who is leaving, most of whom were basically pushed. Nelson had a problem on the sideline with an assistant coach, which led to Lovey's decision to let him go, and he's been a starter, but he probably wouldn't be a starter if Stanley Green was there at strong safety. One of the other players had an incident with an assistant coach, and there were also low grades for some of the players who would, under better circumstances and with everybody healthy, wouldn't be starters next year and didn't figure in his plans. And Mays didn't catch any passes at all this season, so there's a receiver who showed promise at one time but, you know, probably wasn't going to be in the rotation next season. So if you go down one by one, you'll find out that each of those guys. Now, Meganson is transferring to Illinois State.
which is probably at a level that he can play. But he didn't show that ability with Illinois. So I'm concerned from a depth standpoint. I don't think from a starter standpoint next season that these guys figured in Lovie's view as guys that he wanted in the starting lineup.
So, Lauren, do you think Lovie then has some players in the back of his mind that haven't signed anywhere else that he can go after?
Yes.
Is he going to have to look at some junior college stuff perhaps to fill some of this?
I don't know anything about the junior college thing. He doesn't seem to want to go that way, but he's definitely involved in Virtus Brown, who's decommitted from Florida State. And when I bring that up, because when you have 15 new coaches around the country, and I don't know the number. I mean, I know this. It's in that neighborhood somewhere. When you have a lot of coaches leaving, you have a lot of players leaving too, and players that decommit and review their options. And Illinois could take advantage of situations like that. There are going to be players who are supposedly committed to schools right now, who by next week or the week after may be making new decisions. And Illinois hope to take advantage of that and hope to close out the way they did last year. I can't say that they will, but I know that's their intention, to close out strong like they did last year when they took a team that was 14th in the Big Ten in recruiting based on the evaluations on December 1, and by the time they signed, they had a pretty good group. So, you know, they were like 13th this week on December 1. Now they've still got a chance to improve on that.
And Bill says, I just tuned in. I don't know if this has been discussed, but in the situation, talking about inbounding the ball, the corner is a good place to be. No 5-second call and possession arrow to Illinois. The corner would have provided cover on the two sides. Hold on tight to the ball. If they foul, that's good. A tie-up would have gone to Illinois. Just don't throw elbows. Coach said he's been running that play for 30 years. Easy to scout.
Well, you know, Jim, here's the problem with that. You teach as a coach. Don't get yourself caught in the corner. But that doesn't take into a situation where there's less than 5 seconds to go when it's the perfect thing to do. So, well, I mean, you're trained not to go into the corner, but in this case, it would have been a perfect thing to do.
Any place you could get open.
Anywhere. Just catch the ball, and you're going to be fouled within a second.
We'll get back to the calls and the text messages during hour number two. We break now for CBS News. Come back with the second hour of Monday Morning Quarterbacking on WDWS in Champaign-Urbana. Welcome back to hour number two of our Monday Morning Quarterback Show. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tater. We talked volleyball with Chris Thomas to begin. Talk mostly of basketball. We got a lot of football to talk about as well. One thing we were talking about here off the air was the fact that Northwestern, that just defeated Illinois, went over to West Lafayette and they got beat 74-69. And Chris Collins said, gentlemen, let me see what the exact quote was. Guys, look at the stat sheet. You're not going to win on the road when you shoot 5 free throws and the other team shoots 24. And it's the most physical team in our league.
They are very physical. And they have been, you know, that's kind of a tradition there, isn't it?
Yes, that's what they do. Every time you see them play or play against them, you know that they're going to beat up on you. There's going to be a lot of hand checking and those kinds of things.
You always got that big center who's going to be mauling you around the post.
18 fouls on his team, 9 on Purdue. So the Boilermakers go to the free throw line 24 times and Northwestern 5, and yet it turns out to be a 5-point game.
Yeah, Northwestern led late. By the way, I wanted to throw Alan said that the Illinois came back from 30 points. I just checked it. With 19 minutes to go against Clemson in 2009, Illinois was down 23. I think 23 is the all-time record, but I need to double-check that. I know the Seton Hall game was – think the Seton Hall game was 23, and I think the Clemson game was 23. I don't
think last night was 22.
Last night was 22.
Let's talk a little football. All the news yesterday had to do with the college football playoff, the final rankings. And they go Clemson 1, Oklahoma 2, Georgia 3, and Alabama 4. Ohio State wound up being number 5. And Wisconsin number 6. Penn State 9, Michigan 16, and Northwestern 21. The big conversation, all the talking heads after the announcement by the committee, everybody was talking about why did they pick Alabama over Ohio State, and it was about 50-50. Most people, I wouldn't say most people, maybe half the people said that they did the right thing, and half the people said they did the wrong thing.
Well, I guess it's, you know, whose side are you on in the first place, SEC or Big Ten? Maybe that's part of it. But I think that it was a good decision, only in this sense, when you lose to, first of all, Ohio State lost two games, Alabama lost one. That's important. That's really important. And the fact that they lost by such a big margin to Iowa, I think probably Alabama had a better. And the other thing was that the committee kept coming up was is that every single week they had Alabama ahead of Ohio State. What happened to change that? What would have been enough to throw Ohio State ahead of Alabama? They did beat Wisconsin. Wisconsin had the ball the last time, down 6 points, with a chance to win the game with a touchdown. And they didn't do it, of course. They didn't even get close. But
then what would have happened?
Well, Wisconsin would be gone. Wisconsin would definitely have gone. Undefeated, you have to, you know, you can't. Any team that goes undefeated in one of those five major conferences is going to be in the Final Four. Do you have any doubt about
no,
that?
No, it makes a lot of sense, but the way they the way they do this sometimes makes you wonder. I mean, this has been a topic of conversation for weeks now about who's going to be. Yesterday, a lot of that was conference championships don't mean much.
Well, that's one way of saying it. I mean, I think they mean a lot, but they don't necessarily. That's not 100%. And, you know, this is just going to increase the desire and the movement to have eight teams so that you can have at least one from every conference. You just take the champion from each of the five conferences and three at large and go with it that way. I think that would be more satisfactory, but it's going to mean more games, Jim. And the presidents don't want more games because it's going to affect schooling during the month of December when they're not in school.
So as it turns out, Clemson, with a 12-1 record, will play Alabama, 11-1, and that'll be in the Sugar Bowl. And in Atlanta, let's see here, the Rose Bowl winner versus the Sugar Bowl winner, that's on the Monday, the 8th. These other games are Oklahoma at Georgia in Pasadena, and then, as I mentioned, Clemson and Alabama in the Sugar Bowl. So this year, the two bowls that get the games are the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl, and that changes from year to year. Let's go to Bill. Hi, Bill.
Morning. I got a couple things for you. I just caught the end of the Ohio State-Wisconsin game, and they caught Wisconsin was driving, had a good drive going. And they got a great tight end. They called a obvious hold on Wisconsin, but the guy threw the ball down the field to a guy who was breaking left on the ball, and the Ohio State guy just literally tackled him while the ball was in the air, and right in front of the official, and there was no call. Did you happen to see that?
I don't remember it specifically. Go ahead.
Yeah, it was just like I say, to me, it was an obvious. It should have been two penalties. Repeat the down and, 10 yards ago instead of 20. That really hurt him. But the second one was, Illinois' team football team next year going to be considered older or younger with all these guys leaving and a lot of freshmen coming in?
Well, they're going to be young next year. I guarantee you that. They're going to have a whole lot of sophomores playing and not so many freshmen. But this will be a sophomore nucleus, clearly, because – as you point out, the eight guys that left are basically guys with one or two years of eligibility left. They're juniors and seniors.
I think Lovey found some players. They weren't real high ranked last year, some of them two or three stars, but I think they had a fairly decent freshman class last year, so I'm hoping to have another one.
Yeah, they did, and they're running behind right now. They're not up to where we'd like to see them. You got to remember, we're only a couple of weeks off from signing day. December the 20th is signing day. He's just got basically 2 weeks to get this thing together and try to round out the last maybe 8 or 10 people on his class. He's got 15 right now, and it's not an overwhelming 15.
I just wonder if Lovey's name, these young kids, it's like if you ask a young basketball player who Will Chamberlain was, probably most of them wouldn't know it. Now, that's going way back. But, you know, Lovey, I guess he was a current NFL coach, but I don't know. You know, when he was taking the Bears to the Super Bowl, I think his name was a little bit bigger than it is now with kids.
Well, we'll see what happens. It's all about recruiting. You got to have the players.
Thank you, Bill. And Bob is next. Hello, Bob.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. The thing about the football weekend, Lauren talks about this and discusses that if you have really tough games back-to-back, it's very hard to get emotionally up for those games. And I'm thinking
right.
about Auburn. Auburn had beaten Alabama.
Right.
They had to come along and try to beat Georgia after expending so much energy to beat Alabama. I thought that's really tough.
Yep.
And it knocked them out. And so Alabama gets in because Auburn couldn't play up to their level the following week. And that's maybe a misconception in the whole process that the best team maybe wasn't eligible, which I think was Auburn in that particular case. So it was just a misnomer in that the way it turned out. But
well, scheduling is really important in this stuff. I mean, if Ohio State doesn't play Oklahoma, they don't lose that game. They could have played somebody else, you know, and then they'd be in the playoff, probably.
Exactly, exactly. So we have four teams, I'm a fan of going to the Super 8, where you have the five conference champions, and USC, who's to say they couldn't play great in the finals?
Sure.
And then take three teams of the best three from those five conferences left over that weren't a conference champion, and then you get, you know, the eight, and I think that would solve the questions about who gets in and who doesn't. So thanks for taking my call.
That's been kind of a popular topic among people that want eight teams is to do it just that way. You mentioned
yep.
it yourself, and that would seem to be the easiest way to do it.
But they're contractually bound to the four teams for a lot of years now. Contracts can be broken, I understand, but they are definitely contractually settled for a long time.
And we're contractually obligated to take a quick break here. We're coming right back and continue at 356-9397 after this break. Back in our Monday morning quarterback show, Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate are at 356-9397. And you can text us at 351-5357. That's the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. Well, we talked about the other teams in the big championship bowl games. Here are the others. In the Cotton Bowl, it'll be Ohio State and Southern Cal. In the Fiesta, Penn State and Washington. In the Orange Bowl, Wisconsin and Miami. In the Outback, it'll be Michigan and South Carolina. Michigan State will play Washington State in the Holiday. Northwestern and Kentucky in the Music City. And Iowa and Boston College in the Pinstripe with Purdue and Arizona in the Foster Farms Bowl.
And you are nothing in college football if you are not in a bowl game. There are a lot of bowls. Some people say too many bowls. But, Jim, if you're going to be competitive, you need that extra game. It means everything in terms of practice. as long as you're not in the you know, just think of the advantage now that Purdue has, because they can practice everybody. They got a game coming up. There's a whole different atmosphere on campus. I just think it's
well, the biggest thing they got going for them right now is they still have their coach.
That's right, because everybody wants him. I would think he could almost name his price at some of those places in the SEC.
That Tennessee thing is really something, isn't it?
Will they ever get anybody?
No, not yet.
I mean, will they?
They have a new athletic director, evidently.
Well,
or a guy acting as athletic director.
Well, former.
Anyway.
I think they gave him a 2-year contract. I mean, I couldn't figure it out. They said you're the interim AD for 2 years.
Yeah, and
that doesn't make sense.
They also said that he was the one leading the sabotaging of the other coaches.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure he didn't agree with the previous situation. There's no doubt.
And the Nebraska has a new coach, and a Nebraskan coming back to coach the team that he was once associated with. And I told you that he need not wait, not after he had the year that he had. Because who knows what would happen there next year.
Yeah.
But he got a good contract. I believe it was $35 million.
Yeah, that's right. About half of what the payment that Fisher got. Half. Imagine $35 million and the other guy gets $70 million. Oh, well. What's another million?
You know that Kirby Smart got $500,000 for getting to the Final Four?
Yeah, just getting in there.
And just getting in. You don't have to win. You don't have to beat anybody now.
You know, and Billis keeps making this point, and it's a good point. They don't have enough money in college. You know, the athletic programs are out of money.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you say they're out of money, then you look at what they're paying one guy and think, are they crazy? Couldn't you get a good coach for, let's say, $1 million? No, you can't.
And evidently there are some athletic directors that have that in their contract as well. And some of the that if your football team gets into a bowl game, that you will be paid a bonus. And thus, it makes it very difficult to get a membership on the commission that it doesn't involve somebody along the way that has to recuse himself.
It confuses me when they hire an athletic director to take over 20 sports or 25 sports, you know, like, you know, Alvarez has got the answer at Wisconsin. He says, I just have somebody else run all those. It's the football's the only thing that matters. He says, I run the football program. And he has somebody else run all the other sports.
Well, that's a...
And said it.
It's the right thing to do.
It must be.
You're talking about the money. Wanted to mention that the Illini women's basketball team got a victory on Sunday down at... Memphis, it was they were down in the fourth quarter of that game, but they outscored the host team 22-3 in the final 10 minutes to come away with a 63-47 win. How does that happen? You're down 44-41, and then all of a sudden you outscore them 22-3. It's a crazy game, isn't it?
I think we just saw that last night, didn't we?
Well, it's. As we've said many times, and
game of streaks
in our learned conversation about these things, when you shoot the ball and it goes in the hole, you have a lot better chance to win.
What the most interesting thing about that game last night to me, in terms of personnel, this is a personnel comment, is that in the previous game Lucas took it over. We all agreed he tried to, and almost pulled off the win at Northwestern in an overtime loss. In this game, Frazier was far more involved than Lucas was, and was in, and played more minutes. And I see Frazier as potentially a really good player. I think Lucas has got a ceiling. I don't think Frazier does. I think Frazier's got a chance to be really good, and he's been showing it in practice, but he hasn't shown it in the game. He's not making shots. Shots that he, I'm sure he looks at him and says, why isn't the ball going? It's gone on for me my whole life. Why isn't it going in now? Well, he's a freshman. The game is faster. There's more pressure. He's in a whole different atmosphere. But I'm telling you, there might be a day when Frazier is really good, because he's got the quickness. He's got a quickness that Mark Smith doesn't have. He's got a quickness with the ball. Mark Smith is strong, and Mark Smith can go to the basket, but I see some things. And the other thing is, Frazier's got a jump shot that Mark Smith doesn't have.
What about the incoming point guard that we have?
Well, I'm really concerned about him because he's not a very good shooter. That bothers me. I know he is a great penetrator, Ayo Dosunmu, but now I've gotten two good reports on him, and one guy that, you know, my reports aren't 100%, but I talked to a guy that saw the first game, and he went 0 for 10 from 3. That's what he said. Now, I can't verify.
Well, he belongs on this team.
Well,
the way we've been shooting those three.
But he shoots basically a set shot. He shoots it from his chest. He shoots the way you used to shoot, Jim.
Well, I shot him underhanded.
Peach basket?
Yeah, they had the peach basket on the wall. Then we cut the bottom out of the peach basket.
Yeah, it's like, wow, so that speeds up the
right
game.
Through.
We put away the ladder.
Oh, my goodness. It is 10:30, and Brian is here with the news headlines. As we continue with our Monday morning quarterbacking, here is Brian Barnhart. Back in our Monday morning quarterback session, Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here taking your calls. And Bob is next. Bob is in Sydney. Hello, Bob.
Hello. I had two big questions.
Okay.
Or comments. You were talking about seeding in the football and things like that, and I'm sure you talked some earlier. I didn't get into it later about the volleyball team. But the disappointing thing there is the regional that they're in, they got to go through Michigan State and Penn State. So they put all the Big Ten powers in one that Illinois would have to go through.
Well, there are six Big Ten teams in the Sweet 16, so they have to put them someplace.
Yeah, well, just as has happened before, the one year where we had Wisconsin and Purdue were actually in our regional. And yes, it's because the Big Ten is so powerful, but well, still it's very exciting about.
Yeah, we had Chris Thomas on for about 30 minutes to start the program today.
Yeah, but it's still very exciting. But the other question I had is, I know that you, Jim, won't be on after the first of the year. Are you going to be able to do some things like Lauren does, where you're still able to come in and do like a Monday morning quarterback or some things like that?
Not that I know of.
Oh, okay. Well, sure, we'll miss you guys. The conversations you have together are always really enlightening.
Well, you got two old-timers here. I appreciate it, Bob. I appreciate your call, and a good question.
Well,
as far as volleyball is concerned, we did have the coach on for quite a while and discussed a lot of details. And you're right. And let me see where some of the other teams are playing. Nebraska had to go on the road. They didn't get in the top four, so they have to go on the road. They'll play down at Kentucky.
Kentucky.
And Wisconsin is playing at Stanford. In fact, they're playing Kevin Hamley's team in the first match there. Texas and Utah are also there. And Minnesota is playing Southern Cal. Minnesota's the seventh-ranked team. Southern Cal is number 10. And they're down at Gainesville, where the number 2 Florida team is there. So the best team, as you look at this, the best chance that the teams have to from the Big Ten to get in the Final Four is Penn State.
Well, and I guess after you mentioned those, nobody has an easy road at this time.
No, they don't. And when you don't get seeded like the top few teams do, then you take your chances. That's why the win out against Washington was so great, because we came out of nowhere. We never even were in the top 25 this season in the volleyball.
Yeah, but you could see they were improving through the end of the year.
Well, I don't know.
Their last few matches after Minnesota.
I'm not talking about that part of it. I'm just talking about the where they rank teams or where they seed teams. And so we were playing better, and we won a couple of nice matches there toward the end, beating both Minnesota and Ohio State. But the fact remains that if you don't wind up being one of the top 16 in like you know, play at home. We, for years and years there, we were good enough to get to host. We played the first two rounds at home, lots of years.
Well, and the way they came back against Washington was really impressive.
Yeah, it gives you a headache, doesn't it, just trying to listen to it or watch it.
Hey, yeah, exactly.
Appreciate it, Bob. Yeah. Thank you. And the text came in and says that DeSumo is not a point guard, not a good ball handler, and not a good three-point shooter.
Well, he's a good ball handler, and he's he is a point guard because wings need to be able to shoot threes. And if you can't shoot the three, why do you think the number two guard is called a shooting guard? It's because he's just supposed to be a shooter, right?
Because he can shoot, yes.
Right. This guy is a penetrator. Now, is he playing point for his team? He's 6'4". He's probably, you know, routinely what I see is guys that they have somebody that's 5'10 playing point. You know, maybe not in this case, I don't know. But in very many cases, you see where the star player doesn't play the point because they've got a little guy that's a setup guy. But he's going to be he's a heck of a player. It's just a question whether he can get his shot whether he can get that down and whether he can prove his shot. I know they're going to try to work on it and try to get him to extend the ball up over his head to shoot because he's shooting from the chest right now, and you can't get that shot in college.
We're at 356-9397. We take this quick break. Coming right back on our Monday morning. Welcome back to our Monday morning quarterback show. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here, and Alan is next. Hello, Alan.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I am in need of writing a letter to a friend of mine telling him what the prospects are for our basketball team this year, but my faulty memory is failing me, so perhaps you can answer a question. I'm trying to recall because I thought there was a reason given as to why Coleman Lands left the program when he did. Was there actually a reason?
I don't think that it was mutual. I think that Underwood didn't feel that he was going to fit, and I think probably Coleman Lands was unhappy and wanted to go. I think it was mutual. There was no specific problem other than
he didn't have any disciplinary problems like that.
I don't think that Underwood felt that he'd play the kind of defense that he needed.
So possibly that there wouldn't be enough playing time? Because that does affect a lot of players.
Well, sure, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate the call. Noticing in the box scores this morning that Brandon Paul played and started the game. The Spurs got beat 90-87 by the Thunder, Oklahoma City. But he had 2 out of 8 from the field and 4 out of 4 from the foul line. I thought, boy, he's starting. He must be resting people. And I looked through there. I can't find Tony Parker, who is back. I can't find Ginobili. So they must be resting those guys. Otherwise, he wouldn't be starting, for one thing. But he is getting to play a lot.
Yeah, he was getting to play. And I was checking last night with I think, Derek Burson. I asked Derek how much he was playing. He said, well, in recent days, he hadn't been playing much.
Well, that's because Parker came back.
Yeah, yeah.
And Parker has been out for a real long time with an injury.
He's averaging about 3.5 points a game.
But and he was 0-for-3 from threes in the game, and he had a technical foul.
Oops. Don't like that.
Nope. Technical is Paul and San Antonio as a team, and the Oklahoma City coach got a technical foul as well. But they did have 18,000 people at their game. The Spurs really draw down in San Antonio. Right to 356-9397. And our text line is 351-5357. So we play 2 Big Ten games, lose both, and now I have to wait a month to play again in the Big Ten.
It's a crazy schedule, isn't it?
It is.
I guess they didn't want to do it during the holidays when
it's all about Madison Square Garden.
Well, yeah, everything got moved up, and so I guess it's okay. I mean, I'm not happy about it. I'm not going to go to Madison Square Garden for the tournament. I wish, you know, I hate to miss it, but I'm just not going to go.
I just wonder how many people will.
From here?
Yeah. Well, I, from any Big Ten school, that's not, I mean, let's even say Rutgers. That's pretty close. I just can't imagine that a lot of people from Minnesota and the Wisconsin and places like that will hustle off to, unless they want to make a weekend of it or spend some time in New York City. They're not going to go that far away for the basketball. I mean, Indianapolis is perfect. It's right in the middle of the country.
Although if you're at Rutgers, maybe you wouldn't think that. You know, you'd rather be playing closer to home. But, no, the league is too spread out. And you know, I've said many times I don't feel like Rutgers even belongs in the conference. But here we are. And certainly Maryland is a decent addition, particularly in basketball. They've had a good program. 27 games, 24 wins, 27 wins. They're doing a good job with their basketball program. And Jim, they've got some long, strong, tough guys that are going to win a lot of games before this season's over.
I don't know how they got beat the other day by Purdue at home, but when they came onto the court, I thought, oh, there's a tall guy. Oh, there's another tall guy.
They're not only tall, but they're agile.
Yes, they are. I don't know what's going to happen in the league. Somebody's got to prove that they can beat Michigan State.
Oh well, yeah, that's a tall order. I like the way Minnesota's playing, though. They're really aggressive. Those two guys, Lynch and Murphy up front, are just really aggressive and really tough. Lynch is probably going to lead the nation in block shots or be very close. I think he finished second in the nation last year. And just think, Jim, he's a pickup from Illinois State, right around the corner here. Wouldn't you like to have him at center for you right now?
Speaking of Illinois State, I believe I saw somewhere where Megason is going to, mm-hmm. or has gone, or
yep.
is going to Illinois State for his final two seasons of eligibility. He's, of course, from Jacksonville, started 9 games in 2 seasons with the Illini before announcing last Monday that he planned to transfer. I don't talk much on this show, nor do you, about the NFL, but an interesting game in Chicago, not much of a game, but an interesting nonetheless, at San Francisco, which is just a pathetic team, played the Bears, which aren't much better, or probably no better. It's a 15-14 game.
Yeah, I saw Robbie Gould kicked 5 field goals. And he kicked the last one with 4 seconds to go to win the game. Can you imagine the feeling in Chicago when your former kicker kicks those field goals to beat you?
Yeah, and then Jimmy Garoppolo gets his chance to start a game.
You got him down the field. He couldn't get him in the end zone.
And the Bears lose another. They've lost some close games this year.
Did you see the kick, the punt return that the Bears that was their only was one of their 2 touchdowns?
Oh yeah,
was that fantastic?
Guy ran about 400 yards.
Yeah, 61 yards, and he was running to the right and running to the right, and the whole San Francisco team is over there. When he turned around, and went the other direction, there was nobody there.
He had to be fast enough to do that, though.
To
make the turnaround and beat them all to the sideline, but it was quite a play, that's for sure. It's at 10:53. We'll take our last break right here. Then we'll come back and have time for another call or two. If you still have something on your mind, let us know. We're back in our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and DeLauren Tate here. The New York Giants cleaned house today. They fired the head coach, Ben McAdoo, and the general manager, Jerry Reese, right in the midst of a 2-10 season. Reese had been with the Giants in various roles since 1994, served as general manager since 2007, won 2 Super Bowls.
But with the quarterback just benched.
You know, what have you done for me lately? McAdoo took over for Tom McLaughlin after the 2015 season. His first year was encouraging. They had an 11-5 record and ended a 5-year playoff drought. But year two didn't go as planned. The breaking point appeared to be the benching of quarterback Eli Manning as they struggled from the start. The Giants lost their first five games, were officially eliminated from postseason contention before December. McAdoo had to suspend a couple of players. What else is on here? McAdoo joined the Giants and the Green Bay Packers back in 2014. And as was mentioned before, quarterback Manning has been there for forever, and they have benched him, and it says that appeared to be the breaking point.
Really? You know, you'd think you'd start looking to the future a little bit and determine whether you want to draft a quarterback next year, and maybe that's why they're testing the other guy, because obviously they're going to get a high pick, and Sam Darnold's probably going to come out from USC, and then there'll probably be some pretty good quarterbacks that they maybe they. I mean, can Manning go on forever, Eli? He started every game for how many years? 12 years?
As you have pointed out many times, what kind of blockers does he have up front?
Well, yeah. That makes all the difference in the world.
It does, yeah. He got sacked so many times this year, you thought, boy, this guy's finished, but you wonder if he was behind the New England line, how he would do. Yeah, our time is up, thanks to Coach Thomas this morning here on WDWS in Champaign-Urbana.